for the sound of hoofbeats on the ice.
Driving that train, high on cocaine. Casey Jones, you better watch your speed. Trouble ahead, trouble behind. And you know that notion just crossed my mind. This old engine makes it on time. Leaves Central Station at 8:45. Hits River Junction at 17:02. At 9:45, you know it's traveling again. Driving that train high on cocaine. Casey Jones, you better watch your speed. Trouble ahead, trouble behind. And you know that notion just crossed my mind. Trouble ahead, lady in red. Take my advice, you'd be better off dead. Switchman sleeping, train 102 is on the wrong track and headed for you. Driving that train, high on cocaine. Casey Jones, you better watch your speed. Trouble ahead, trouble behind. And you know that notion just crossed my mind. The trouble with you is the trouble with me. Got two good eyes, but we still don't see. Come round the bend, you know it's the end. The fireman screams and the engine just gleams. Driving that train, I'm cocaine. Casey Jones, you better watch your speed. Trouble ahead, trouble behind. And you know that nothing just crossed my mind. Driving that train, I'm cocaine. Casey Jones, you better watch your speed. Trouble ahead, trouble behind. And you know that notion just crossed my mind. And you know that notion just crossed my mind. That iconic Grateful Dead song. It's in honor of the reunion that's going on this week. The four remaining original members have joined up with some other great musicians. They're playing in Chicago on the 4th of July. I wish I could be there. You know, this weekend, we celebrate our independence from tyranny. We honor all the soldiers who died for freedom. And we eat way too much and watch fireworks. Yet the tyranny of the police state that we live in today, probably at least as bad as what our country's founding fathers had to deal with. And the only freedom that most soldiers are dying for is the freedom of the rich to make lots of money by oppressing the poor. But we'll celebrate anyway. I thought about singing a George M. Cohan song instead of the Casey Jones. Oh, I'm a Yankee Doodle, a dandy Yankee Doodle, do or die. But, you know, I just couldn't get into it. We'll celebrate, anyway. I'm Chuck Gregory. This is the beginning of another New American Dream radio show, and we're streaming live on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. It's a listener-supported station, so don't forget to go over to freedomslips.com and check them out. I'm proud now to introduce my friend and co-host, Mike Palachuk, an American writer.
Hello, Chuck. Tonight we welcome back special guests Sherwood Ross and Mickey Z. And so tonight we are joining together for the New American Dream radio show in Fort Lauderdale, Duluth, Coral Gables, Queens, New York, and wherever you are. My recommendations for this week, find it on YouTube, The Real Deal, Episode 72. The title is Charleston Appears to Be Another False Flag. And as always, False Flag Weekly News every Thursday on No Lies Radio with Kevin Barrick and Jim Fetzer. And now we hear from the Bubba family. Bubba John, Bubba Jean, Bubba Jennifer, Bubba Barbara, Bubba Kate, and Bubba Carl in Charleston, South Carolina. The Bubbas are on their We Just Won a RV at Bingo tour of the world. They have visited the Olympics, Gaza, the Ukraine, Libya, Fallujah, the world headquarters of the KOA campgrounds in Billings, Montana. They cranked the RV into and out of the Ferguson Walmart parking lot. They got bumper stickers from all over the world, all over the back of that RV. I know, right? Stay on the same page. Bring something to the table. Take it to the next level. It is what it is. And now they are parked in the parking spot, all parallel parked nice by the GPS parallel parking thing. Got the portable camo George Foreman grill on the sidewalk. It's smoking, sending up that natural briquette made of 95% hardwood charcoal and 5% cornstarch binder all over the people coming in for the big funeral. Bubba Kate, Bubba Jennifer, and Bubba Justin are playing volleyball on the roof of the RV up there with the four Confederate flags they put up just as soon as they stop anywhere. Bubba Bubba and Bubba Jennifer got jarts going on the terrace. And while the septic tank is draining into the gutter all nice and smooth and southern slow, Bubba John is lounging, swaying back and forth in the hammock between parking meters, while Bubba Jean is taking her first shower in days in the bushes with the camo portable shower from Gander Mountain. Got their clothes, camo jeans, camo t-shirts, camo shorts, camo socks, camo underwear, camo shoes, hanging in the trees all around. Finally get a chance to feel clean again. It was the same day that Obama came for the funeral and sang the theme from The Lion King. And when the bugs got bad, all the Bubbas headed inside with the family pack of Twinkies and listened to Dick Gregory on YouTube inside the RV saying the shooting never really happened. He was all saying this and that and taking forever to say it, but still, he is Dick Gregory. So you got to stay on the line and listen no matter how long he takes. And they listened to the relatives of the ones who they say got killed, saying they already forgave the Nazi kid and it was pretty much just all right that he killed their folks. They might be wanting to lock all the country down because of race war, martial law, says Bubba Barbara as she puts away the last of the Twinkies. Yep, said Bubba Kate. It's hot out, said Bubba Bubba. We're almost out of Twinkies, said Bubba Carl. Bubba Barbara ate the last one 2 minutes ago, said Bubba Jennifer. I know, right, said Bubba Jean. Hey, hey. Bubba Carl and Bubba Jennifer pointed toward the open window and they all ran outside. They put up their hands to catch the money coming down, floating, catching a breeze, then headed back down again, falling out of the black helicopters, hovering, whapping overhead. Looks like about 29 million to me, said Papa Bubba John. And they all had to agree. That sounded just about right.
And now, a word from the American Zeitgeist Factory. Take it to the beach, that summer reading list. What can you take with you from your busy life for this one chance at some time alone to really soak it all in, the sun, the news, really catch up on all that stuff? So when you come back to the classroom or office, you'll be an even better you, tanned and informed and ready to, well, just be a better American and thinner and a better student, parent, and spouse and employee and a better person overall. Something with some pop and excitement and current events, just a good read. Well, there's something, I guess. There's JFK, Why He Died and Why It Matters by James Douglas. But then if you read that, it will change your whole world. You'd not be able to, after that, it'd be impossible to carry on the fake, phony. How about 50 Shades of Vampire Blood? Big kitchen, big hamburger, big life. The boy with the new Brighton tattoo. And the new self-help book by that one guy, 6 Sexy Superheroes Save Sacramento. This message has been brought to you by the American Zeitgeist Factory and the good folks at Milk Duds. America is on the brink, but milk duds last forever.
And now we bring you the Charles Bukowski, Bill Hicks, George Carlin, Target and Walmart 4th of July card special American collection. Tell those Americans around you what you really think of them. A card designed with you in mind. Some sample selections from the Charles Bukowski, Bill Hicks, George Carlin, Target and Walmart 4th of July card special American collection.
The difference between a democracy and a dictatorship is that in a take orders later, in a dictatorship, you don't have to waste your time voting. Charles Bukowski.
Bill Hicks, the American dream is a crock. Stop wanting everything. Everyone should wear jeans and have free t-shirts, eat rice and beans. People in the United Kingdom and outside the United States share my bemusement with the United States that America doesn't share with itself. I hate patriotism. I can't stand it. It's a round world, the last time I checked. Listen, the next revolution is going to be a revolution of ideas.
George Carlin. It requires a uniform. It's a worthless endeavor. You might have noticed that I never complain about politicians. I leave that to others. There's no shortage of volunteers. Everyone complains about politicians. Everyone says they suck. But where do people think these politicians come from? They don't fall out of the sky. They don't pass through a membrane from a separate reality. They come from American homes, American families, American schools, American churches, and American businesses. And they're elected by American voters. This is what our system produces, folks. This is the best we can do. Let's face it, we have very little to work with. Garbage in, garbage out. When fascism comes to America, it will not be in brown and black shirts. It will not be with jack boots. It will be Nike sneakers and smiley shirts. Germany lost the Second World War. Fascism won it. Believe me, my friend.
Some sample selections from the Charles Bukowski, Bill Hicks, George Carlin, Target and Walmart 4th of July card special American collection. A card designed with you in mind. When you pay your taxes to the U.S. government for its military, you get depressed. When you get depressed, you listen to Barry Manilow. When you listen to Barry Manilow, you have dreams about Mandy Johnson in the chicken shed in 1978. When you have dreams about Mandy Johnson in the chicken shed in 1978, you wake up to try to find Mandy Johnson on Facebook. When you try to find Mandy Johnson on Facebook, you drive to Scotts Bluff, Nebraska, and find out the Chicken Shed is now the Chicken Shed restaurant, and Mandy Johnson is the owner, and she has been eating chicken and mashed potatoes 9 times a day since 1979, and you have to crawl out the tiny window of the men's restroom to escape from Scotts Bluff. Don't have to crawl out the tiny window of the men's restroom to escape from Scotts Bluff. Join the National War Tax Resistance Community.
And now, for another episode of On Babushka Kalashnikov's Corner, the view from my Piroshki cart. Grandma Kalashnikov writes on her website her most recent comment, "Fight the power or get used to your shackles. Secrecy is the enemy of the truth. The reason so-called conspiracy theories exist is simply due to government-imposed secrecy, forced by the military force and power of government on duped, unwitting citizens. End the secrecy, and you'll end most questions so long as government acts honestly and truthfully and scientifically and ethically. It is dishonesty and corruption and lying and cheating by government which leads citizens to use their constitutionally protected rights under the precious First Amendment to question such lying and cheating and evidently criminal acts by government officials paid by forced taxation of taxpayers. It is lying and cheating by government which fosters all this. If government behaved honestly and openly with a conscience, there would be no need to question them most of the time. Unfortunately, your government is a pathological liar and cheater and a criminal outlaw, which belongs in a jail cell or at the end of a firing squad. Franz Jagerstatter, The White Rose, Thomas Paine, Thomas Jefferson, Paul Revere, Jim Fetzer, James Tracy, Kevin Barrett. There's a reason they exist, a reason for what they do. On Babushka Kalashnikov's Corner, sponsored by Powder Milk Piroshki. Heavens, they're tasty and expeditious.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. What if we were as afraid of climate change as Ebola? I see skies of blue and clouds of white. The bright, blessed day, the dark, sacred night. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. What if the sophomore American history textbooks in 1 million American high schools told the truth about Waco, Oklahoma City, 9/11, Sandy Hook, and Boston? I hear babies cry. I watch them grow. They'll learn much more than I'll ever know. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. What if the true killers of John and Robert Kennedy and Martin Luther King were reported by the big newspapers, TV news, and radio? We would not be stupid, and we would be able to understand what the American military, Barack Obama, Bill and Hillary Clinton, and American rich corporations are doing to us this very day. And our children would have a better world, and our grandchildren. Yes, I think to myself, what a wonderful world. Oh, yeah.
Tonight's show is sponsored in part by a grant from the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation and also by FindWarCriminals.com. If your name is Bush or Clinton or Obama or Blair, and you want to meet up with other war criminals, you can find them at FindWarCriminals.com. More than just online dating, pre-screened for compatibility and jailhouse food preference. FindWarCriminals.com.
And now another episode of The Lives of the Cowboys. We find Duke and Bubba Carl sitting in the squad car in front of Quick Trip. And we can hear Bubba Carl shouting at Duke, "You believe that?" says Bubba Carl. "And I suppose we didn't go to the moon either." A bit later in the day, we see Officer Bubba Carl back inside the convenience store getting more coffee and a large muffin. He hears someone talking in the line ahead of him. "And I suppose we didn't go to the moon either," says Bubba Carl to the woman as she pays and walks out the door. After lunch, Bubba Carl sat in the dentist's office waiting for Duke to get some work done on his left upper bicuspid. Duke was knocked out, but Bubba Carl heard the dentist talking with his assistant while he drilled. "You believe in that?" said Bubba Carl, putting down his Time magazine and marching back to confront Dr. Donald. "And I suppose we didn't go to the moon either." Well, then it was almost the end of the day. Duke and Bubba Carl were sitting in the squad car on the curb in front of the convenience store. Duke's jaw was numb, but he said, yeah, he could go for a huge muffin. So Bubba Carl said he'd fly if Duke would buy, and he got out to go get in line. On the way, Bubba Carl was stopped by a homeless guy who asked him for a quarter. After a few minutes, Duke looked back to see what was up with the giant muffins and saw Bubba Carl still talking with the homeless guy, who was pointing and gesturing and mostly doing all the talking while Bubba Carl listened. Duke watched Bubba Carl get back into the squad car without any big muffins. Bubba Carl sat down, stared straight ahead, and looked like he had had the stuffing knocked out of him. "Wow," he said. "And I suppose we didn't go to the moon either." The Lives of the Cowboys, sponsored by Big Blueberry Muffins in the clear plastic pouch. And on the other side of the globe, we now get the view from Uncle Bill's front porch. Modern propaganda techniques utilized by the corporate state to enforce anti-democratic and destructive policies routinely entail the manufacture and manipulation of news events to mold public opinion and, as Edward Bernays put it, engineer consent towards certain ends. Such events include not only overt political appeals, but also acts of seemingly spontaneous terrorism and militarism that traumatize the body politic into ultimately accepting false narratives as political and historical realities. Western states' development and utilization of propaganda closely parallels the steady decay of political enfranchisement and engagement throughout the 20th century. Upon securing a second term in 1916, the Democratic administration of Woodrow Wilson plunged the U.S. into the most violent and homicidal war in human history. Wilson, a former Princeton University academician, groomed for public office by Wall Street bankers, assembled a group of progressive left journalists and publicists to sell the war to the American people. George Creel, Walter Lippmann, Edward Bernays, and Harold Lasswell all played influential roles in the newly formed Committee on Public Information and would go on to be major figures in political thought, public relations, and psychological warfare research. The sales effort was unparalleled in its scale and sophistication. The CPI was not only able to officially censor news and information, but essentially manufactured these as well. Acting in the role of a multifaceted advertising agency, Creel's operation examined the different ways that information flowed to the population and flooded these channels with pro-war material. The committee's domestic organ was comprised of 19 subdivisions, each devoted to a specific type of propaganda, one of which was a division of news that distributed over 6,000 press releases and acted as the chief avenue for war-related information. On an average week, more than 20,000 newspaper columns carried data provided through CPI propaganda. The division of syndicated features enlisted the help of popular novelists, short story writers, and essayists. These mainstream American authors presented the official line in a readily accessible form, reaching 12 million people every month. Similar endeavors existed for cinema, impromptu soapbox oratory, four-minute men, and outright advertising at home and abroad.
With the experiences and observations of these war marketers variously recounted and developed throughout the 1920s, along the influence of their elite colleagues and associates, the young publicists' optimism concerning popular democracy guided by informed opinion was sobered with the realization that public sentiment was actually far more susceptible to persuasion than had been previously understood. They proposed solutions to guarantee something akin to democracy in an increasingly confusing world. But their solutions lay in objective journalism guided by organized intelligence and propaganda, or what Edward Bernays termed public relations. They felt that only experts could be entrusted with assessing, understanding, and acting on the knowledge accorded through their respective professions and fields. Along these lines, journalism should mimic the then-fledgling social sciences by pursuing objectivity and deferring to the compartmentalized expertise of established authority figures. News and information could similarly be analyzed, edited, coordinated to ensure accuracy by journalists exercising similar technocratic methods. Although Lippmann does not exactly specify what body would oversee such a process of organized intelligence, his post-war activities and ties provide a clue. Edward Bernays' advocacy for public opinion management is much more practical and overt. Whereas Lippmann suggests a regimented democracy via technocratic news and information processing, Bernays stresses a privileged elite's overt manipulation of how the populace interprets reality itself.
Such manipulation necessitates contrived associations, figures, and events that appear authentic and spontaneous. Any person or organization depends ultimately on public approval, Bernays notes, and is therefore faced with the problem of engineering the public's consent to a program or goal. We reject government authoritarianism or regimentation, but we are willing to be persuaded by the written or spoken word. The engineering of consent is the very essence of a democratic process, the freedom to persuade and suggest. Bernays demonstrates an affinity with Lippmann's notion of elite expediency when pursuing prerogatives and decision-making the public at large cannot be entrusted to interpret. In such instances, democratic leaders must play their part in leading the public through the engineering of consent to socially constructive goals and values. This role naturally imposes upon them the obligation to use educational processes as well as other available techniques to bring about as complete an understanding as possible. Written in the early 1950s, these observations became especially apt in the latter half of the 20th century, where the U.S. is typically a major aggressor in foreign and eventually domestic affairs. Yet what does Bernays mean by, for example, educational processes? An indication may be found by noting his central role in the promotion of tobacco use, municipal water fluoridation, and the overthrow of the democratically elected Arbenz regime in Guatemala. With the advent of the national security state in 1947, secret programs emerge where the people are, as a matter of course, intentionally left unaware of the state's true rationale and objectives. Indeed, a wealth of contemporary historical examples suggests how the engineering of consent is wholly calculating and anti-democratic, and where the crises requiring such drastic and immediate public relations and military measures are themselves the result of the same leadership's policies and actions.
The U.S. economic provocation of the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor and the Tonkin Gulf incident precipitating U.S. military occupation of Vietnam are obvious examples of such manufactured events. Similar techniques are apparent in the major political assassinations of the 1960s, where to this day the public is prompted to partake in the false reality that Lee Harvey Oswald was the sole culprit in the murder of JFK, as much as Sirhan Sirhan was responsible for the death of RFK. In fact, in each instance, overwhelming evidence points to CIA involvement in orchestrating the assassinations while training and presenting Oswald and Sirhan as the would-be assassins.
The U.S. government's assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., probably the most influential African-American public persona of the 20th century, is not even open to debate, having been soundly proven in a court of law. Yet, as with the Kennedys, it is a genuine public relations achievement that much of the American population is oblivious to the deeper dynamics of these political slayings that are routinely overlooked or inaccurately recounted in public discourse. The View from Uncle Bill's Front Porch, sponsored by homemade apple pie in the bright red can. And now get ready to be released for the summer movie season, My Big Fat American Auschwitz. Muslims and terrorists and commies, oh my, tall heads and Negroes and homos and liberals and tinfoils and wetbacks, poor people and you people and they people, oh my, eagles and beagles and Edelweiss, sauerkraut and six packs, My Big Fat American Auschwitz, coming soon.
Now, please join us as we look in on the new CBS reality TV show, One Day in the Life of an American Solzhenitsyn, an American Mandela, an American Thomas Jefferson, an American prisoner. A prisoner, an American prisoner, recently looked out from his prison window. A high prison window in the middle of a big city down on the little people and little cars below. He was not allowed pencil or paper, but he was allowed to think because they had not yet figured out how to stop that. And as he did every day, he thought out the letter that he would send to everyone when he someday got that chance. He was, for some reason, sure that what he had to say would be news to those below, which it surely would be. He had now written a poem inside his head, And in order to remember it, revise it, to let it out into the world, he told his poem each morning to the fogged, battered, thick plastic window. He looked out the window and his lips moved ever so slowly. He whispered ever so softly, and he was heard around the world. I am your spy. I am the clerk, the technician, the mechanic, the driver. They said, do this, do that. Don't look left or right. Don't read the text. Don't look at the whole machine. You are only responsible for this one bolt, for this one rubber stamp. This is your only concern. Don't bother with what is above you. Don't try to think for us. Go on, go on, drive. Keep going on, on. So they thought, the big ones, the smart ones, the futurologists. There's nothing to fear, not to worry. Everything's ticking just fine. Our little clerk is a diligent worker. He's a simple mechanic. He's a little man. Little men's ears don't hear. Their eyes don't see. We have heads. They don't. Answer them, said he to himself, said the little man, the man with a head of his own. Who is in charge? Who knows where this train is going? Where is their head? I, too, have a head. Why do I see the whole engine? Why do I see the precipice? Is there a driver on this train? The clerk, driver, technician, mechanic looked up. He stepped back and saw, what a monster. Can't believe it. Rubbed his eyes and, yes, it's there all right. I'm all right. I do see the monster. I'm part of the system. I signed this form, only now I am reading the rest of it. The bolt is part of a bomb. This bolt is me. How did I fail to see? How do the others go on fitting bolts? Who else knows? Who has seen? Who has heard? The emperor really is naked. I see him. Why me? It's not for me. It's too big. Rise and cry out, rise and tell the people you can. I, the bolt, the technician, mechanic, yes, you. You are the secret agent of the people. You are the eyes of the nation. Agent, spy, tell us what you've seen. Tell us what the insiders, the clever ones, have hidden from us. Without you, there's only the precipice. Only a catastrophe. I have no choice. I'm a little man, a citizen, one of the people, but I'll do what I have to. I've heard the voice of my conscience, and there's nowhere to hide. The world is small. Small for Big Brother. I'm on your mission. I'm doing my duty. Take it from me. Come and see for yourself. Lighten my burden. Stop the train. Get off the train. The next stop, nuclear disaster. The next book. The next scene. No. There is no such thing.
Join us next week for another episode of One Day in the Life of an American Solzhenitsyn, an American Mandela, an American Thomas Jefferson, an American prisoner. And now a word from National Public Radio, good old Reverend Bob, Miss Thompson, your fifth grade teacher, the police, the tired old editor strolling down the street after a long day at the office, the Democratic Party, the American Legion, the Boy Scouts, and Mom and Dad, all the people you trust to tell you the truth. If a plane would have hit the Pentagon, we would have seen that short film 1,000 times by now on Chevrolet commercials and Miller Beer commercials, and on commercials somehow juxtaposing the Pentagon puppy pellets, the Pittsburgh Pirates, and the Popemobile. So, no plane hit the Pentagon. And because we know that from the lack of Popemobile prevarications, we can be sure that Bush, Rove, Rumsfeld, et al. Are liars and murderers. And we can include a bunch more folks in there as well. Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton, the nice Obama family down the creek, down the street. They all know the truth and refuse to tell us. And that's the truth. And I don't care what happens to me. It's just important that you know. This has been a word from National Public Radio. Good old Reverend Bob, Miss Thompson, your fifth grade teacher, the tired old editor strolling down the street after a long day at the office, the police, the Democratic Party, the American Legion, the Boy Scouts, and Mom and Dad, all the people you trust to tell you the truth. Well, Jennifer, Jen Jankowski, sat at a red light on Main Street. She had the radio on full blast and her head down, writing a text to her best friend, Allie Baby, who was at home on her porch, stuck there because she had to babysit all morning, which was actually basically forever. Jennifer looked up when the car behind honked. She took off, skillfully pulling into the middle of the intersection while staring hard at the driver behind her in the rear view and working her thumbs feverishly on her text. It's like, so rude, she wrote to Allie Baby on her porch chewing watermelon gum. It's like, you know, actually, there are no wrong questions. We might not know all the answers yet, but it is never wrong to ask a question that we have. And we have so many questions. And now we have to ask questions about the school shooting in Connecticut and the so-called Boston bombings, coordinated attacks, shock and awe. Jen Jen turned right, then flipped on her turn signal.
Would our own United States government take part in such atrocities in order to bring about a sense of fear in society? If so, why? Why would that sense of fear be so important to them to do such a thing? Since that time, we've had probably dozens of these similar events. Virginia Tech, Fort Hood, the Sikh Temple in Milwaukee, the Pentagon gunman, the Tucson shooting of the congresswoman, the Colorado theater shooting. For a list, go to Mother Jones Online, a guide to mass shootings in America. Jen Jen slammed on her brakes and stopped in the middle of the intersection of 3rd and Adams as an old couple pulled out.
She continued with her text, maybe it is mental illness, guns, people getting fed up with bullies and exploding, people getting fed up with all these idiots everywhere around them. But there is just too much of a pattern here to be content with that explanation. Rather than following our own pattern of saying lone nut every time and never getting past it, I think the time has come to say government, CIA, FBI, and then prove it was not, and then go on from there. Remember the D.C. sniper, the underwear bomber, the shoe bomber, September 11th, Oklahoma City?
How about the burial of Osama bin Laden at sea? The illustrated tall tale of Jessica Lynch. The lies about Pat Tillman. The stolen presidential elections of 2000 and 2004. Bush wasn't even a real president. Think of that. Weapons of mass destruction. Colin Powell at the UN. A decade earlier, the lie about Iraqi soldiers taking babies out of incubators and leaving them to die, which helped lead to the first Gulf War. The lies about why Pearl Harbor really happened. The lies about the circumstances around the death of Senator Paul Wellstone. The lies about the whole history of the United States, for starters.
Gulf of Tonkin, which means the whole Vietnam War and why it was fought was a lie. Landing on the moon. Have you ever watched the YouTube press conference video of the returning Apollo 14 astronauts? Now might be a good time. How many Native Americans did we slaughter in order to raise our free and brave flag on a hill looking over San Francisco on the afternoon TV show Full House? Jen Jen waved her hand way up out her window at some friends passing the other way, and flipped them off when they didn't wave back.
The war on drugs, where we lock up people for decades for possession of a plant. And we love our beer commercials and our beer in the meantime. The war on immigrants. They're illegal, we cry from atop the Statue of Liberty in Ellis Island. Look up Operation North Woods and Iran-Contra, the confession of E. Howard Hunt, Watch George Bush Sr.'s little speech at the Gerald Ford funeral on YouTube. It's all just a supreme joke when you get right down to it. United States of America, that is. Does that all really relate back to the alleged Boston bombing?
It does. It's absolutely all connected. Just as the murders of John F. Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, and Martin Luther King are connected to today, this morning, tonight. The ones who did those crimes and hid them are still here, still in control, still running their scam, motioning everyone up closer and closer to the stage, telling us it's this fantastic concert with free beer, when actually it's a hanging. And they are now doing crimes like killing children because they know we will then allow them to tighten the noose. We don't even see the rope. And they are very capable of pulling that trap door without us knowing the trap door is even there until it is too late.
Well, there is a place like no place on earth. A land full of wonder, mystery, and danger. Some say to survive it, you need to be as mad as a hatter. And if you come to understand this mad place, the others will tell you that you are entirely bonkers. But I'll tell you a secret. All the best people are.
Jenny pressed send and coasted to the curb in front of Allie Baby's house. She got out, let the driver's door hang open, and ran up toward the porch. Allie Baby flipped some brand new watermelon gum into the air, and Jenny caught it in her mouth. They both screamed and did their traditional meet and greet dance, then sat down on the swing, pushed off, and went high. Our first guest of the evening is Sherwood Ross. Sherwood Ross comes to us each month from Coral Gables. Sherwood, as you know, is a legendary American journalist. He started his career at the Chicago News Service. He is a poet. He is a commentator on the internet. He has done a million and one things. He was a part of, integral part of the original civil rights movement. And Chuck is going to get Sherwood on the phone right about now. Sherwood.
Hello, it's Chuck and Mike and the New American Dream Radio Show, and you're on the air.
Hi, Chuck and Mike, and your many thousands of listeners. You know, I'd like to begin my celebration of the 4th of July early this year. A little strange, but it's important to read off the names of the prominent American terrorists who have committed war crimes in the Middle East. And that's because until and unless all these fine ladies and gentlemen are brought to justice, I don't think we've got a whole lot to celebrate. I just can't get enthusiastic when they're walking the streets. We just witnessed the spectacle of hundreds of New York police tracking down two escaped killers. Yet the persons I'm going to name committed many more and far worse crimes and on a broader scale. Okay, let's name the names. Besides Presidents George Bush and Barack Obama, top legal authorities inform me that the following officials also allegedly committed war crimes. These are Vice Presidents Dick Cheney and Joseph Biden, Secretaries of Defense Donald Rumsfeld, Robert Gates, and Leon Panetta, Secretaries of State Colin Powell, Condoleezza Rice, and Hillary Clinton, National Security Advisors Stephen Hadley, James Jones, and Tom Donovan, Directors of National Intelligence John Negroponte and James Clapper. Happy 4th of July to you all. Again, Central Intelligence Agency Directors George Tenet, Leon Panetta, David Petraeus. And over in the Pentagon, alleged war criminals include the members of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and some regional commanders in chief, especially for the U.S. Central Command, known as CENTCOM, and the African Command, known as AFRICOM. Besides General Martin Dempsey, happy 4th of July, sir, of the U.S. Army, Joint Chief of Staff war criminals include Admiral James Winnefield, Jr., General Raymond Odierno, Chief of Staff of the Army, General James Amos, Commandant of the Marine Corps, happy 4th of July to you all, Admiral Jonathan Greenert, Chief of Naval Operations, and General Mark Welsh, Chief of Staff of the Air Force. As for those who have headed the Central Command since the U.S. invasion of Afghanistan, we identify the following war criminals: Lieutenant General Martin Dempsey, happy 4th of July, Admiral William Fallon, General John Abized, General Tommy Franks, Lieutenant General John Allen, and General James Mattis. Now, those just mentioned have, in the opinion of outstanding legal authorities, committed war crimes far more massive and terrible than any crimes committed by Americans in our federal and local prisons. And if you're not going to imprison those who ordered their huge war machines to kill by the thousands, you may as well open up the prison doors and free 2.5 million inmates here at home, some of whom are imprisoned for the terrible crime of smoking pot. Well, what we've got now are people like Ashley Manning behind bars for telling the truth, while a mass murderer like George W. Bush, who hied the nation into a war, into terrible wars, and he's residing in luxury in Texas. You know, the late Vincent Bugliosi, the famous Los Angeles County District Attorney, wrote, "Bush should be prosecuted in an American courtroom for first-degree murder arising out of his war in Iraq." Bugliosi said Bush is guilty of the most serious crime ever committed in American history, knowingly and deliberately taking this country to war in Iraq under false pretenses. Bugliosi said Bush is responsible for killing 4,000 GIs, seriously wounding 30,000 more GIs, and killing 100,000 innocent Iraqis. Another legal authority, Professor Michael Haas of Hawaii, writes in his book about George Bush war criminal that the Bush regime typically held prisoners without even telling them the charges against them. Now, that right was first established in 1679 in Britain. That's how far George Bush went into the past, into medieval times. So Haas counts no fewer than 269 different kinds of war crimes for which Bush is liable, not just two or three different war crimes, but almost 270 different kinds of war crimes, each of them affecting dozens or hundreds or thousands of innocent people. And these range from the torture of children. I mean, can you believe it? The torture of children, to denying prisoners' attorney, to forcing confessions under torture, sexual attacks, threatening prisoners' families, waterboarding, I mean, beating up prisoners' children in front of them to get them to sign a false confession. You know, also many innocent people were held in prisons that were kept secret from the Red Cross. You and I were asked to donate to the Red Cross all the time. It's an outstanding organization. One of the things they do is they report on whether prisoners are being kept properly in their cells. Well, if you hide the prisons from the Red Cross, what does that say about what's going on in your prisons? The CIA alone operated at least 11 such prisons. Russia's military forces also took 24,000 prisoners, most of them civilians, virtually all of them innocent of any offense, locked them away for years in places like Guantanamo without lawyers or bringing them to trial. And referring to Bush's many wrongs, Professor Haas, a great legal authority, asserted they have been so devastating to those affected that civilization cannot tolerate their being ignored, because civilization cannot survive their being repeated over and over again. And so I say, happy July 4th to you all, and get going. Let's see that Presidents Bush and Obama are brought to trial, have a fair trial, and I hope sincerely that every one of them may go free. But if not, we've got to put them in prison where they belong, and free Ashley Manning. Have a good day. Have a good night to every one of you.
Sherwood, thank you so much. That was a strong and clearly heartfelt discussion.
Well, you're entirely welcome, and you have a happy 4th of July.
Well, you too, Sherwood. Let's make a difference. Coming up. It's now time for the new hit reality show, Summer Class Reunion. Let's look over the shoulders of Martha and Doc, who are sitting in the bleachers, paging through the...
Hey, look at that, will you? Says Marcia. Every class had a photo and then something about the class. I remember that, I think. Did I take my pills this morning? Oh, bother.
Look at that, says Donald. American history, the second, Mrs. Classic. One, Bush steals election. He's not really the president for 8 years. Two, Bush and Cheney et al. Attacked the United States September 11, 2001. Three, Bush lies about weapons of mass destruction, starts war that kills hundreds of thousands. Four, Jessica Lynch rescue fairy tale showing everywhere. 5, U.S. military lies about death of Pat Tillman. 6, Barack Obama announces death of Osama bin Laden. Therefore, all the murders and lies and theft and torture was A-OK. Good to go.
Everything was so simple back then, says Marcia.
Not complicated, said Donald.
Peaceful, says Marcia.
And I think the sky was more blue then than it is today, says Donald.
I know, right, says Marcia. This has been Summer Class Reunion. Join us next week when we go to the big game. And just in from the news desk, this late-breaking news brief. The House Un-American Activities Committee will be reconvening next week. The committee will be investigating un-American activities, such as the murder of children in Iraq and Afghanistan, and the restricting of personal freedoms through the so-called Patriot Act, as well as the infiltration of American organizations by members of clandestine terror groups. Are you now, or have you ever been, a member of the Central Intelligence Agency? Appearing next week before the committee will be Dan Rather, Tom Brokaw, Matt Lauer, Katie Couric, Diane Sawyer, Brian Williams, and in absentia, Peter Jennings. And now, sponsored by Carnival Cruise Lines, another episode of Barack Obama, I'm the King of the World. In this episode, we will see King Barack standing in the front of the USA Titanic with his arms outstretched, his mouth wide open and shouting. What is he shouting? And what is that out there in the dark? Well, looks like that's all the time we have.
A woman who had the day off from the factory because she has a temp of 103 walked down her front steps. Her name was Rosie. If it's 102, she goes in. Not 103. Just a personal rule she's always gone by. Well, she wrapped her arms tight around her against the chill, shivering her body to go out to the street to check the mail. She had leaned out over the curb to open it up, and all that was inside was an envelope with the flap open. Rosie pulled it out, shook out the letter on white paper. There was a note pasted together using words cut out of an Armed Forces magazine. She read it out loud. While cars rolled past and a friend walked by on the sidewalk, said hello and kept going. We have your life. Send tax dollars or you will go to prison. The IRS will take your freedom, your money, your children, your shitty little house that you can't even afford that. And remember, no funny stuff. Rosie had planned to spend that money on health care, roads, a car that worked, her daughter's elementary school, a bit of food, and now this. She hugged herself even tighter and looked all around. She didn't take a step to go back inside, wrap her pillow around her head, and turn on a game show. Rosie lit a cigarette, pulled hard, the cherry glowed bright. She looked all around to see who was watching. Rosie bit the cigarette hard in her teeth, squinted against the smoke, and held the letter out straight in both hands and made a big ceremony out of tearing it up bit by bit, letting the bits fall on the glass and the gravel and the bicycle parts on the front lawn as her neighbor walked back from the corner store, watching her, shaking her head, tisking all the way home.
The United States is not a police state, and you would be a fat communist soccer lover wearing lederhosen and a tiny Bavarian hat with a feather and tight jacket and knee socks with buckle shoes who does not fit in with the rest of the family at Thanksgiving dinner if you thought so. There are not police everywhere. You do not have to go to where the police put you in order to hold your sign and have your freedom of speech like a Bolshevik perched atop a potato crate like a stranded nanny goat. This is America. There are not thousands and thousands of people making their living off of the war on terror in Homeland Security, the Border Patrol, the U.S. Army, the airport, box cutter, shampoo, bazooka up the wazoo, finder guys, the video game industry, the bullet industry, the casket and handcuff and easy bake oven secret spy camera industrial complex. It's just not a police state. The police are not shock troops protecting the rich against the poor. It's not. Say it. It's not. The New American Dream presents an American Hero special. Recently, we honored patriotic singer-songwriter Toby Keith. He put a boot up their ass. Awesome. Then we honored General Norman Schwarzkopf, General Colin Powell, General Tommy Franks, General something-something Petraeus, and all the other generals out there in charge of our patriotic military who are protecting us from people plowing mountains with oxen and killing them before they fly those oxen over here and dive bomb us with box cutters and not allow us to worship in the churches of our choice. And then we honored Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, who uttered those words that will live forever in Catholic hymnals and on the sides of police cars, in the same awesome style of Madeleine Albright speaking about the children dying in Iraq during the sanctions. We came, we saw, he died. This week, we honor all of you who stand like zombies whenever the American flag passes by in a parade, and when the national anthem is played at any sporting event from seventh grade intramural checkers to the Super Bowl. You stand without even thinking, and for that we thank you. For if you had a brain or stopped for a moment to think of what you are doing, what you are being asked to do, condone America and its wars and killing in order to steal from other nations, you would crawl out of that stadium on your hands and knees in shame. And for that, we salute you. You are not a prevert or a murderer or an insane person. You are an American hero. Our next guest of the evening is Mickey Z. Mickey Z comes to us each month from Queens, Astoria, New York City. Mickey is a activist. He is a writer. He is a vegan. And I salute him for that. He is a lot of things. And Chuck is getting Mickey's interview lined up right about now.
Oops. Sorry, I had the wrong thing queued up here. Here we go.
Well, it's the beginning of July, and we are very glad to welcome back to the show Mickey Z, our activist friend from Astoria, New York City.
Hey, Chuck. Pleasure, as always, to be here.
Well, we missed you last month. We played a recording that we found of you, but I'm really glad that we're able to work our schedule so that we could talk this time.
Absolutely, and so
for
everyone listening, this is not a recording. This is really me.
The real Mickey G. So, man, the news in the last week or so has been pretty amazing in the Supreme Court decisions. What do you make of this?
I've had a lot of conversations about this recently, as this past weekend was Gay Pride, which is a citywide party here in New York City, and I was speaking, for example, someone who was raised by two mothers and articulated to me how when she was younger, because same-sex people couldn't get married, if something were to happen to her biological mother, her mother's partner wouldn't automatically get custody of the children because there was no legal paperwork. Mm. So when I hear stories like that, because it's outside of my experience, I can only relate to people outside it, obviously it's a powerful, powerful legal tool in a country that's so bureaucratic and it's so difficult to navigate things like health care and so on. So I'm celebrating with everyone else that this is a huge step in the right direction. But like a lot of other people, I say, you know, we need to focus on so many other issues too, and hopefully this doesn't send a lot of activists home saying, you know, mission accomplished. I'm hoping, my top hope is that it helps people who really need this type of legal status, And it motivates activists to realize that victories are possible and that there's a long road ahead, but when you have these type of victories, hopefully it keeps people forging ahead on that road and inspires new people to join the struggle.
Well, I share your concerns and your relief or whatever, gratitude that that we've at least made a step in the right direction.
Absolutely.
So you mentioned the gay community there or something, a gay pride thing. What else is going on up in New York? It's the time of the year when people actually go out and do some activism instead of staying home and trying to do it on Facebook.
I hope so. There seems to be a wide range of stuff. The neighborhood in New York City where I'm from, Astoria, has a very large Greek population, and there are actions happening here related to the economic crisis in Greece. As I said, recently was the Gay Pride Parade, which then links up to a wide variety of different activist movements there. And some people that I know that are involved in reproductive rights issues are gearing up for a big summer of protests and travel across the country related to protecting reproductive rights. And I haven't, to be honest with you, I haven't seen a whole lot going on related to Black Lives Matter, except solidarity vigils and rallies after the Charleston shooting. And so I'm very eager to see that particular movement start to ramp things up this summer, because as we've discussed many times on this show, I feel that that's a powerful, powerful movement, and one that can galvanize a lot of people towards change.
Absolutely. And I think the most important thing is that people from all the different movements work together.
Yeah, I concur. That's something that you and I have discussed in the past. It's not always possible. And I noticed, like, in my own, anecdotal sense, in my activist life, I've encountered plenty of examples where groups or individuals that I thought were solid allies and comrades, you find out perhaps they have more of a personal agenda, or they don't want to work with others for fear of, like, watering down their issue, which is really a self-sabotaging perspective to delineate between these issues. One of the things that everyone used to say back in Occupy was all our grievances are connected. And that eventually evolved into saying all our solutions are connected. And this isn't to mean to say that individuals shouldn't channel their energies into the issues that affect them most personally or those that inspire them. But as you said, it's absolutely essential that we recognize the importance of solidarity and coalitions, because the system as it stands can withstand single issue activists. And they can occasionally do something like the Supreme Court ruling that we began this discussion with. But if the people in the gay rights movement say, wow, this victory is just filling us with motivation and power, imagine if we brought the same apparatus to join Black Lives Matter or any other necessary movement that's out there. The system isn't built to withstand that. I think the powers that be really have no trouble with single issue activism, because it presents the illusion that activism and dissent is even welcome in this country. And occasionally they say, hey, look, you just won the Supreme Court victory. It works. As opposed to saying, when people start saying this entire system is corrupt and we need to address the underlying unholy trinity of patriarchy and white supremacy and capitalism, and when you talk in terms like that, that's when people get scared and concerned. But I think we need to work on individual issues, but never forgetting the underlying foundation that makes all this oppression possible.
Now, if you look back at the 60s or so, there were successes on two related but really quite different fronts, the anti-war movement and the civil rights movement.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Well, I think that's just a very concrete example of how success in one area can pull some momentum into another.
I absolutely concur. I think what you're articulating is the fact that in the 60s there was this general sense that there was a culture of resistance, that resistance was like the air that people were breathing at the time, and so that spawned the American Indian Movement and the Puerto Rican Young Lords and what used to be called Women's Liberation back then, and then Stonewall happened, which launched the Gay Rights Movement, and this revolution was in the air, that there was a sense of this happening. And we get that to some degree today because of social media and the instant connections we make. But to bring it back to what you said earlier, we have to get off social media at some time, or keep naked mobile in your pocket on your smartphone, but get out and do what they did in the 60s and have the meetings and create the coalitions and do the outreach, because the general population is out there waiting to hear messages of social justice, and we need to reach these people and not just be preaching to each other on Facebook pages, you know, just liking each other's memes and look how clever we are. But we need to reach out and find more allies and grow these movements, because the bigger it gets, then it's not manageable anymore. And I think that's, for example, that's what happened with the anti-war movement back in the Vietnam days. I tell people stories like I read about. I believe it was in May of 1970, there was a humongous protest in Washington in which something like 16,000 people were arrested. And I say that to people today here in New York City, and I say, can you imagine if we could even get 16,000 people to show up at a march or a rally? Sometimes it feels like a fantasy. Back then, there were so many people traveling from all across the globe to descend on Washington that 16,000 were arrested. How many hundreds of thousands were still out in the street with, you know, preaching and yelling and doing outreach? And that, to me, is inspiring. And as you said earlier, there's no replacing that. You got to get out. You got to interact and connect on a human level to create that change.
I was part of that march in Washington. Unfortunately for me, at least, I didn't get arrested. But
so you weren't in the 16,000, but you were in the crowd. So
exactly. I was in the whatever. The numbers ranged from 200,000 to 500,000. Nobody was really very sure. So.
And at the end of the day, those numbers don't matter, because the corporate media is going to distort them anyway.
Exactly. And but it was a lot of people.
Yeah, and I mean, all you need to do is have, I mean, you could say, I'm going to ask you a question then. How did it feel to be among hundreds of thousands of people joined together in the name of ending an imperialistic war?
It felt wonderful. It felt like vindication. It felt like, I don't know, solidarity, although I think that term came along later, but you know, we were all there together. We'd sing together. We'd listen to speeches. We'd cheer, and we'd sing some more.
So, I mean, it sounds like community.
Yes, exactly.
Not to appear like a cranky old man or a broken record, it's not as easy to cultivate that via the internet. You could make connections that you couldn't have dreamed of back then, but there are connections that you made on the ground in 1970 that today's activists maybe aren't even conceptualizing. And so I think that's where the diversity of tactics comes in. There's a time and a place for all the clever social media stuff, And there's a huge time and place for that sense of like being in the same place at the same time for a common cause.
Exactly. Well, we are either out of time or very nearly out of time, but there was one more thing I wanted to bring up. And that is, this is July 4th weekend coming up, and what are we going to do about that? Is that a time for celebration or an opportunity for protest?
I think we could use it as a motivation to one day create a place that and a holiday that can live up to the term independence, because there is an independence. There's independence for capital, and there's independence for the 1% per se. But we need, as activists and social justice fighters, to recognize that independence and liberation and collective liberation is the goal. It's the worthy goal. And what they're telling us, the story from July 4th, as we know, is a product. But the idea is that it's not unattainable, and we can't rest on our laurels and say it is what it is, or America's still the best. You know, even if it hasn't evolved. If you do want to love your country, then fight to make it better, fight to make it freer, fight to make it more just, and fight to break down these barriers that are oppressing people from coast to coast.
Well, I think that was eloquently stated, and a good way to sign off for this month. And I look forward to talking to you again next month.
Absolutely, Chuck. It's always a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
Hey.
Mad as hell. I'm not.
Hey.
Anymore. Hello, everyone.
Hey.
For your local Earth news, this is Chuck Gregory and Mike Palachuk with a review of today's news from the eye of the hurricane and the eye of the blizzard. And now, a word from the President of the United States on that greatest and most appropriate of our national holidays, National Lunatic Day, the 4th of July. Barack Obama, who has two children, kills children with drones, with starvation, and war pollutes this country with lies. He smiles. His children smile. His wife smiles. We smile. It's all good. We are all on the same page, taking it to the next level, bringing it to the table at the end of the day.
Hope and change. We can only hope, but there is no hope. Hillary waits in the wings, more of the same, same big money ruling her, same wherever it all comes from, no hope, none.
Doctors destroy health. Lawyers destroy justice. Universities destroy knowledge. Governments destroy freedom. The press destroys information. Religion destroys morals. And our banks destroy the economy.
Barack Obama speaks on national TV. God bless you. God bless America. And God bless the American people. 9/11 was done by terrorists and not by Israel and the president and his father and the vice president and the president's advisors and the New York mayor. What's his name?
Osama bin Laden was buried at sea. Iraq had weapons of mass destruction. Boston was real, just like we said. Aurora was real, just like we said. Oklahoma City, Tucson, LAX, Las Vegas, Waco, Sandy Hook.
All so-and-so, just like we said. Have a safe and happy National Lunatic July 4th. And God bless the USA. Go America. Remember to water your lawn on alternative days, on alternative sides of the streets, in alternative cities. And hey, it's all good. Please drive safely on your way home. It's crazy out there.
That's all, folks. That's the news. And we're out of here. Good night and good luck. And so it goes. That's the way it is. Stay on the same page. Take it to the next level. It is what it is. At the end of the day, have a good day. And remember that you can start the revolution today by making direct eye contact with any policeman.
Hey, Hey. Hey. That Malaysian airliner, you know? You heard about it? And they still can't find it?
Yeah?
It's up your butt.
Nah, it's up your butt.
Weapons of mass destruction, they're up your butt.
Nah, they're up your butt.
Osama bin Laden was buried at sea and up your butt.
The Boston bombers, they're up your butt.
Building 7.
What?
It's up your butt.
Nah, it's up your butt. You better stay sitting and reading that goat book and not move.
Why?
Because it's up your butt.
Tune in next week for another episode of Road Trip. George W. Bush, Karl Rove, Dick Cheney, Bill Clinton, Barack Obama, Joe Biden, and Paul Wolfowitz visit Colorado. And now, please sit still, keep your hands to yourself, and listen up. As part of the City Adult Education Program, we are pleased to welcome you to this hot, sweaty middle school auditorium on this hot summer morning. Hello, everyone. It is time for All I Ever Learned in Kindergarten is All I Ever Learned Ever. But I guess I don't want to be stupid forever. And besides, if I come to the summer school class, I get a T-shirt. And if I stick it out to the end, I get DQ ice cream. And besides, somebody else is looking after the kids while I'm here, so I figured, why the hell not? Besides, my friend is also enrolled, and I can walk with her, and someone else has the kids, so why the hell not, right? If you believe you are not in the right class, now is the time to leave. The over 60 softball class is meeting outside, and the basket weavers and glue painters are down the hall. Once we begin, we won't be able to let you leave, and once we end, well, you will never be the same. Just saying. Okay. Everyone good? Okay. Please, people, sit still, keep your hands to yourself, and listen up.
Operation Northwoods was a 1962 plan by the U.S. Department of Defense to stage acts of simulated or real terrorism on U.S. soil and against U.S. interests, and then put the blame of these acts on Cuba, in order to generate U.S. public support for military action against the Cuban government of Fidel Castro. The plan was proposed by senior U.S. Department of Defense leaders, including the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Lyman Lewis Lemnitzer. As part of the U.S. government's Operation Mongoose Anti-Castro Initiative, the plan, which was not implemented, called for various false flag actions, including simulated or real state-sponsored acts of terrorism on U.S. and Cuban soil.
Codenamed Operation Northwoods, the plan, which had the written approval of the chairman and every member of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, called for innocent people to be shot on American streets, for boats carrying refugees fleeing Cuba to be sunk on the high seas, for a wave of violent terrorism to be launched in Washington, D.C., Miami, and elsewhere. People would be framed for bombings they did not commit. Planes would be hijacked using phony evidence. All of it would be blamed on Castro, thus giving Lemnitzer and his cabal the excuse, as well as the public and international backing they needed to launch their war.
Those of you needing to go to the bathroom can just hold it. Among the most elaborate schemes was to create an incident which will demonstrate convincingly that a Cuban aircraft has attacked and shot down a chartered civil airliner en route from the United States to Jamaica, Guatemala, Panama, or Venezuela. The destination would be chosen only to cause the flight plan route to cross Cuba. The passengers could be a group of college students off on a holiday, or any grouping of persons with a common interest to support chartering a non-scheduled flight. Lemnitzer and the Joint Chiefs worked out a complex deception.
An aircraft at Eglin Air Force Base would be painted and numbered as an exact duplicate for a civil registered aircraft belonging to a CIA proprietary organization in the Miami area. At the designated time, the duplicate would be substituted for the actual civil aircraft and would be loaded with the selected passengers, all boarded under carefully prepared aliases. The actual registered aircraft would be converted to a drone. Takeoff times of the drone aircraft and the actual aircraft would be scheduled to allow a rendezvous south of Florida.
From the rendezvous point, the passenger-carrying aircraft would ascend to a minimum altitude and go directly into an auxiliary field at Eglin Air Force Base, where arrangements will have been made to evacuate the passengers and return the aircraft to its original status. The drone aircraft, meanwhile, will continue to fly the filed flight plan. When over Cuba, the drone will be transmitting on the international distress frequency a Mayday message stating he's under attack by a Cuban MiG aircraft. The transmission will be interrupted by destruction of the aircraft, which will be triggered by radio signals.
This will allow ICAO, International Civil Aviation Organization, radio stations in the Western Hemisphere to tell the U.S. what has happened to the aircraft instead of the U.S. trying to sell the incident.
Okay, people, that's it. Wasn't so bad, was it? Please fill out the course evaluation forms by the exits, and we advise you not to try to talk to the folks coming out of the adult softball class or basket weaving or colored blue painting like ever. You're now a stranger in your hometown. The rest are still in kindergarten. Maybe you should have stayed there, but you didn't. Just saying. Thank you for coming. This has been...
All I ever learned in kindergarten is all I ever learned ever, but I guess I don't want to be stupid forever. And besides, if I come to this summer school class, I get a T-shirt. And if I stick it out to the end, I get DQ ice cream. And besides, somebody else is looking after the kids while I'm here, so I figured, why the hell not? Besides, my friend is also enrolled, and I can walk with her, and someone else has the kids, so why the hell not, right?
See you next summer. Well, it's been another long week in Newtown, my hometown, at the end of the umpire. Time for the publication of the new sophomore history textbook. The bread and butter of 3B1K Publishing House, managed by Nicostatus Greenberg in Newtown. Seems nobody's paying much attention to history these days. What do you do? Well, he's running all over the grounds to talk to people to figure things out, for one thing. Last week, he visited his daughters, the one who's a public school history teacher, and then he headed across the street jaywalking to get to the little white house where another daughter homeschools her kids. Nicostatus is running all over heck and high water trying to figure out what to do. Why? Because he thinks. He believes, he assumes, it is his decision to make. While in the meantime, at the Times New Roman, 9 of Nick's best historians clogged the black back table in the corner in low light. The table was wood and thick, carved with sayings, epigrams, and epithets, and in the middle were pitchers and bottles and guacamole and chips. They'd heard what Nick was thinking about holding up the release date on the new edition, perhaps ordering last-minute, last-second changes. If it's in the history book, it's history, Phineas Jagoff raised his mug and roared. They cheered. Hear, hear! Can't change that anymore, and you can change the weather, stated Oramund Wicker, perhaps louder than he imagined. Marketing, sales, reconstruction. We won't have it. We'll go on strike. Strike, strike, strike. The historians absorbed jaded glances from the next table, where the spine gluers union number 374 was planning their own strike against 3B1K. Of course, they would not want the damn lollipants to steal their thunder, but the historians in Big Wood offices always talked about quitting or doing something that would shake the world, but they never did. History is history. Same as physics is physics. Nothing to change. Just memorize it. Move on down the hall to typing and English 101. The spine gluers of number 374 pushed their stomachs further into the table edge and clunked their heads together in their traditional toast. Another roar went up from the back table as the history buffs had drifted into charades, as always. One fool perched on the table, squatting and depicting either the Lincoln Monument or Lewis and Clark in a canoe, completely overstating the case that the river or the canoe or the paddle, for that matter, even existed at all, as if it made any difference. The spine gluers, the ones who held it all together, as a sign over their shop and on their gray work shirt said, had long inherently been engaged in discussions of existential philosophy, drifting out the doors of their little corner of the world, along with the smell of the glue, were thoughts and words, quotes, dreams. Does anything really exist, though? See, that's the thing. I know, right? And they had finally targeted this edition, the end of the world, everything. There would be no American History 101 sophomore textbook shipped from Newtown all over America because they would not stand for it. None of this crap is even real. They hissed and whispered as they glued the books together, taking deep breaths of the glue pots and the glue fires, the aroma and substance finding its way into their lungs, their coffee, their food. They put up with it for years, it seems. Nothing exists. Somebody's making all this crap up. I know, right? Now it's going to all come tumbling down on top of their heads. They nodded as one, clinked their glasses, clunked noggins, and stood around the table singing in hearty tones the Spine Gluers number 374 Union Song. Three of the historians stayed late, surrounded by chairs upside down atop table. The barman tossed them the keys, grabbed his coat, and headed out. The three made a walk around, checking in the restroom, under tables, behind the bar. History is heroes and wars and whatever the government does, one of them hissed freely. I know. Race, gender, social class, a narrative. It's rubbish, hissed the second. You tell geography with a nice story, here's where crap is, that's it. The dumb smoking kids don't know their history, and that's our fault. They want to only watch TV and wonder who's their daddy. Our fault, the other two chimed away impeccably on time, like Big Ben. It's where it's all headed. Can't be stopped. Unless one of them went to the bar, found three clean, gigantic glass mugs to the table. Like what Rita said at the meeting, one of them said to the others. If we could discover, you made air quotes, a big mistake in the book, then that gets big publicity, then we do a big thing about correcting it, then we get all this free notice of our history book, and all that better for us. Better yet, said Miller. We insert a gigantic gaffe. Don't tell anyone. Somebody finds it later. And boom! Whole thing come tumbling down. Exactly, said the third. That is so right on. I know, right? That's the news from Newtown, where all the police and soldiers are thugs, all the Democrats and journalists are cowards, and all the Homeland Security COINTELPRO lone gunmen are about average. The new American dream means never having to say some question or idea is not valid. We're allowed to ask any questions that we have. There are no wrong questions. There's no hidden black military budget. There are no UFO files Americans cannot see. No JFK documents that will not be opened during our lifetimes. No destroyed RFK murder photos by the LA police. No evidence from Ground Zero taken away before we can even look at it. We're not the USSR of the 1960s. This is supposed to be America. That is our dream, to become America, the new America, the real hope of the world. We have a dream of bringing the United States politicians, journalists, and generals who have brought about this long 12-year war and debacle to trial and put on TV just like OJ every afternoon so every American can watch. Just like the McCarthy hearings and the JFK funeral procession. What we need is a new American dream, not of new homes and toasters and microwaves, but of becoming the type of country we always thought we were. Right now we live on lies, we subsist on lies, but it's not really living. 9/11 was an inside job. Bush, Cheney, Wright, Powell, Rumsfeld, Ashcroft, Obama, Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton, Joe Biden, they all know that. What we need in America is a truth commission like they had in South Africa to heal their broken country. We need to put certain people on the stand. We need to be allowed to ask questions. Our country is surely broken as well. The troops are not protecting us. That is someone's spin on the day's news, somebody's advertising slogan, somebody else's sermon. The troops serve the empire. They're not heroes. They kill and plunder for the empire. American bases overseas serve nobody but the empire. The heroes in our country are the protesters, the ones who go face to face with the empire. Those in the plowshares movement, for one example. You have to know that Barack Obama knows the whole truth about the 9/11 attack. He's complicit. He's lied. He's continued the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan based on a lie, and he knows he's lying. He lied right to our faces on national television when he said that Osama bin Laden had been killed and buried at sea. Osama bin Laden was buried at sea and Jessica Lynch was rescued heroically. The USA does not torture. Iraq had weapons of mass destruction. George Bush won the 2000 election. See, there's a plane there in that hole in Shanksville. It went all the way into the hole and no... no blood, no bodies, no luggage scattered or plane parts. And Osama bin Laden was buried at sea. Remember the anthrax letters which said, "Are you afraid?" Those were not written with a rock and chisel like Fred Flintstone from the recesses of some cave in Afghanistan. Those letters came from persons within our own government, like a horror movie and the killers in the same house with us. These killers are right here with us, and they want us to be afraid. We cannot be afraid. Well, that just about wraps up this week's episode of the New American Dream Radio Show. We hope you enjoyed it. We thank you for joining us tonight. We hope you'll be back next week and every week right here on Revolution Radio. Slips.com. Thank you and good night, Mike.
Good night, Chuck, and thanks to our guests, Sherwood Ross and Mickey Z. I want to mention the book, the new book, and I suppose we didn't go to the moon either. It's available at Amazon.com, and the news is that today was it's now available in Kindle, a Kindle edition. The book is called "And I Suppose We Didn't Go to the Moon Either." Tune in next week to the New American Dream Radio Show at 5:00 Central Time on Revolution Radio. And next week we'll have Richard Flamer, Jim Fetzer, and Susan Lindauer. To get the archives of the show from February 2011, go to the show.newamericandream.info. And as always, we apologize for our mistakes, and we are planning right now, as we speak, to make fewer mistakes next week. To contact the show, either Chuck or me or any of our guests, write to me at nwestiowa@gmail.com. And as always, we wish to acknowledge the work of South Dakota stone artisan Borglum Borglumson as he works to make over Mount Rushmore, put the real face of American history up there in stone, Lee Harvey Oswald, Sirhan Sirhan, Mark David Chapman, and James Earl Ray. Follow the ongoing project at loosrock.com, rollingstones.com, and jackrubyrubyridge.com. And to help support the show, please purchase one of our Tom Jefferson Rolling in His Grave Handy Campfire Rotisseries for the hobo in your family, or get one of our family size Obamaville Tom Jefferson Rotisseries for the busy family on the move from town to town, woods to woods, made in Korea. And so good night to my friends, Chuck and Lorraine. Stay warm down there. And good night, Mrs. Calabash. Good night, Todd Beamer. Good night, Mark Bingham. Good night, Daniel Lewin. Good night, Ken Lay. Good night, Timothy McVeigh. Good night, Emily Parker. Good night, Ben Wheeler. Good night, Crystal Campbell. Good night, Nancy Lanza. Good night, James Foley and Stephen Sotloff. Good night, Charlie Hebdo. Good night, Mohammed Atta. And good night, Barbara Olson, wherever you are.
Imagine there's no hell below us, above us, only sky. Imagine all the people living for today. You may say I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. I hope someday you'll join us, and the world will be as one.